Blog Talk Radio.
Of Sonic Effects, where people with Masonic focus in life can sit together and discuss, review, think about things Masonic and about themselves, how the world around us applies to our growth and development, and do that through the lens of the ethics and principles of the gentle craft, it's been called, and truly it is. So much going on, we stand shoulder to shoulder in a way, and spread over the course of through the entire globe. Right now, we're being buffeted more clearly by sophistry. You know, people that, it's nothing new. Although they act like they've, you know, invented it, making up falsehoods to deceive us, there's nothing, absolutely nothing new with that. We trace this throughout the history of humanity. So they've just they're not even reinventing it; they're just using it. So it's like using a broken tool or using a scale that cheats the consumer. That's all. Nothing astounding, quite disingenuous. And it makes me wonder if at the root of it isn't some sense of misanthropic tendency. You hate all of that hatred for humanity, for people, the disdain. Oh, I'm wrong. Anyway. Great to have you here. We have an interesting program today. The commentary, giving up control, accepting praise, comes at a price. I hope you like it. And the music is just scintillating. And today, I'm going to share some poetry with you from a fellow named Max Ehrman. Desiderata, and I think you'll like it. It's if it's your first time with it, it's one of those things I always admire in people when they can quote. You know, they're affected by a piece of poetry and they can quote it to me. And when it's convenient and useful in discussion, I always enjoy those moments. I have some wonderful friends around me that do that regularly. It's just a pleasure. But let's put that aside and get on with things, as they say. As you sit back and get comfortable, on this, the 154th day of the year, it leaves us 211 days left. We're closing in on solstice, 17 days from now. Yeah. I'd like to plant some questions in your minds now to contemplate during the next hour as we're together. Here we're Masons probing and asking questions. So, but not always. We'll conveniently and essentially never ask you to reveal the true secrets of masonry. The secrets of masonry, of course, as you've declared, where did you first become a mason? Do you remember the answer you gave? Yes, of course you do. It's there. So I'm just putting the question to you. How, if that being the case, how has masonry changed you? Or has it not yet? You know, you have to give up something. You have to give up an element of control in order to accept the messages, the influence, the potential of, that Freemasonry releases in us. How will you be, if you're new at it, how will you be different as a man of reason? Masonry is, after all, in one aspect, about contemplation, understanding what's going on around us. Always the question in mind, is it for just the, although the emphasis is largely around group work, the effort, the collective effort, it also is something personal and individual, as you know. That experience that we have had going through various obligations is personal, and it's similar. When we watch your work, it instills that sense, that memory of what it was like for us. The compatibility, that sense of connectiveness, that empathy. How will you be different as a man of reason? For those of you who feel that the work and the understanding is an ongoing phenomena, and how will you be different? Just speculate a bit with me. Not that these are end games, that there's a path and then something, we reach a goal. This isn't one of those intellectual efforts that is ongoing. As a student of the arts and crafts, arts and sciences, how do you study? In the library as a reader, or experientially, going out to events, and going places? Maybe you go to Machu Picchu to climb to those, to be in those places of, or Stonehenge, or one of the henges in Britain. Where the energy and the time of is concentrated into an emotional experience, where we're brought together and connected. Maybe that's where you go. Exploring, maybe you explore new sounds, as we've talked about in Masonic Effects at different times. What is the effect of different types of music? This is where really, unabashedly, where we take the blinkers off life, where we look around, and where we sit quietly. Yeah. No, I'm not too interested in the opinion of the Entered Apprentice in the Pythagorean sense. This is an opportunity to absorb information. Life is an opportunity, not necessarily Masonic Effects. But are you exploring new expressions of art, new to you? And are you curious about the newness at the time? You know, Colonetti, if we're looking at painters, the artists of Florence, well, it didn't all mean that they were living there. They came there. This is a hot spot for creativity. And you want to know the influences on that artist's work, and of course that would be influences on their mind. Or are you a student that discovers online today? Do you follow threads of ideas? So if you're exploring whether you have any original ideas, are you following the paths thoughts of other people who have asked the question before you? Are you prone to learning by spoken word, by attending lectures or presentations and discussions, thoughtful discussions, not these silly, superficial debates? No. What makes them go from something silly and superficial to something with gravitas, something with meaning, is the attitude of the participants. Is the trust, is the truest barrier to our growth us? Things to think about as we go about our business here today. This is to help us along the way. This is Charles Mingus. If this is your first time listening to Charlie Mingus, well, you've saved a good opportunity for this point in your life. This is his tune called Moanin'. Yep.
Thank you.
that's a breathtaking event. Gets us going, if nothing nothing else will. Charles Mingus. Sit back, top up your beverage, whatever you're sharing with us today, if it's a hot cup of tea or a whiskey or wherever you happen to be, and cast your mind out there to our brethren and their situations and the little bits that we hear about them. We have listeners in the Philippines, for example, a very devout and well-organized culture and country. What would drive good men, good people, to take the steps they have to, in their struggle to be rid of what they feel is a serious decline in their morality, the trade in drugs? It's not a complete answer, but it is an answer. Now, it's easy for us to judge. Even my goodness, yes. How dare I? But cast your mind out there and ask yourself, what would it take for good people to come to that conclusion that the necessary step, the only viable solution, is to take harsh steps to protect what you have? I can only wish them well and hope they succeed and step it down. And you know, good people will step it back. We've had our soldiers weren't thoughtless and murderous people during our major wars, but they took on the training that was required to rebuff an enemy. And then when it was over, they put down their weapons and picked up their tools and went on about life. And we can immediately point to the cup half full types will immediately point to all of the problems, the lack of support. Well, it wasn't so much a lack of support as a lack of understanding. And we've come a long way because we've communicated, and you and I and other people have facilitated that communication because of the openness and the fraternal, the connectivity between Masons around the world. And just as you have a unique perspective on the world through your eyes, everybody else does. 7.5 billion of us have a unique perspective. A man, woman, and child. And we're taught to understand that, and from that understanding to embrace it. If we're able to do that, it helps to define our nature. And if that's too frightening, don't do it. But if you're looking for certain truths in life, one of the most essential is, as the Delphi Oracle had taught us, to know thyself. Know your true nature, warts and all, not the puffery, not the stories, not the dreamer, the reality of it. What do you really like? And one day that, you know, the answer to that question is going to become apparent, not because I say so. We've been students of ourselves for a long, long time. Sometimes we just don't pay much attention. Lessons learned. Here's one that is coming at us that I've noticed. Each of you approaches Masonry from the uniqueness of a culture, of a language, of education, of experiences, of what you've had to do to take advantage of opportunity, and also a variety of abilities. Some have natural ability, some of us seem gifted, some of us, and most of us, work very, very hard, even the most talented people. For some, it seems that it comes easy to them. being able to make something seem easy, but taking on a hellish amount of work to get there is, and doing it with a smile, without complaining, without mentioning the amount of work, to align your goals with your ethics. Huh? You remember the work, where you find that in the work of masonry. You'll remember, cast your mind out there. We have unique histories, so we come to certain understandings from a variety of pathways. So to presume that my pathway and our pathway is right for you is really ethnocentric. It's like saying mine is predominant. That's not true. That's not true. That's sophistry. It's creating a position based on an illusion, a distortion of information. How you've evolved. I just think about how around the world, the differences in history, and as more and more, as I get older, I realize that one of the things that I never thought that I would ever, I couldn't imagine enjoying and pursuing is biographies, learning about the lives of other people. And then as I do, if I'm learning, it's not this silly, false identity of celebrities that have become Masons. It's the other way around. It's the other way around. It's not that I want to hail the celebrities who people have done something of merit that have been Masons. It's the other way around. They were also intelligent enough to and fortunate enough to be part of the order. They made the same decisions that you did. Oh, yeah, we might see some long-haired people, that are long-eared people, who just fell into it because they were told to. There's people on the fringe. Maybe they just show up because. But there are also more people invested in understanding. And that's the beauty of masonry. So given all these different histories around the world, we can endorse and subscribe to a way of being, a way of thinking. And so to compare where I'm sitting and the Masonic experience to a place that has hundreds of years more history, Masonically and culturally, is working with wind in my eyes. I'm not really seeing clearly. I'm tearing up. If I'm starting to think clearly, all those ideas that were merged into masonry, all of the work of the governance and constitution, and the work of the beautiful work of the ritual, as ongoing as it is, happens, though some would claim in this universe that masonry, the glory days, the pinnacle, the zenith of masonry was in the past, was in the 17th, 18th century, and others, like me, feel that the best is yet to come. And perhaps that is because of the situation that I'm in. I'm speaking from what I experience and what I know. The best is for masonry is yet to come. I want to walk with you 1,000 years from now. Let's say we've reached that point where we're 1,400 years old, 1,500 years old. What will the perspective be? If we are looking from that pinnacle back on this time, tell me about it. We're not going to notice certain things, and other things are going to be other things. hindsight is going to be quite enriched by things that we may have done unintentionally. Always the unintentional is where there's gaps. And there's always gaps. So let's not pretend. 1,000 years from now, we'll have the advantages of these super overheated computer systems, AI, artificial intelligence. AI is going to be there working beside us. Oh, it's interesting applying it to science right now. But when we get those types of tools, you know that there will be masters of those tools that will be within our craft. They'll be masons. Oh, and don't be talking about the Luddites who had difficulty around the world when the internet came about. Think of them as cautious people. Think of that as a learning opportunity. What did we learn when we cling to old and outdated ideas? Well, we learned that progress doesn't stop because some are outdated. And within masonry, there's always that renewal, that reinvention, because we're always taking in and adding new minds. It can be the frantic and desperate who are trying to do something meaningful with their life after stooping at labor. Who am I to suggest that masonry won't be the answer for them? And they can be as ambitious as they want. We don't even know what time is, let alone trying to speed things up and hasten it. Doesn't matter. Do that if you must, or run around the block. Be frantic. Doesn't matter. Or be laconic. Look, who's watching? Who's listening? Who? And what's his reasons? What's her reasons? All these questions that are so primary right now will be gone in the 1,000 years. We will have found a way of reconciling these dilemma. Oh, I have great faith in us that we will. The gender issue, that's sensitive right now. 1,000 years from now, we, you and me, and our societies around the world, that global expression of community will be different. And we will have answered those questions. Oh, yeah, we know. Just like today, there's evidence of that around us right now. Because we subscribe and support research that is asking questions to treat illnesses that are daunting. Impossible, some would say. And it's not that we're throwing money away. We are investing. We're investing in humanity as much as we're investing in ourselves. Yeah, I'm not really comfortable when it seems self-serving, when we're just doing things that seem to take care of male illnesses. And that's important. But so is the diseases affecting newborn children of all genders these days. We learn. So keep those thoughts in mind. Giving up control, accepting praise comes at a price. Damning with praise. It's a phrase I've heard over the years, but never gave it much thought. That is until I began noticing some odd outcomes in lodges. I found the mathematics wasn't adding up. Let me explain. A few years ago, I sat through a performance that pressed on my good manners. It was obvious the person had not prepared, yet praise flowed copiously after the final act. Maybe this was my apple falling from the tree, inspiring me to understand the question of gravity. If the feeble effort was enough to gain praise, Why, over a generation, were expectations low? This question took me along one of those pathways full of aha moments. One interesting fork had me deciding if praise and encouragement were the same. They are not. The latter builds on effort and audacity, encouragement. The former is an end. Perfection needs no further effort, praise. One encourages effort, the other concludes the opposite conclusion. It made me think praise is a luxury few of us can afford. It seems cruel to think that there is a problem with praise, but there it is. In his summary of his work, Solitude, The Singular Life in a Crowded World and the End of Absence, Reclaiming What We've Lost in an Age of Constant Connection, the author Michael Harris raises some interesting points. If you believe the praise, you are letting other people control what you think about your work, because at this point, so intimately invested in that work, you are also letting those people control what you think about yourself. Is accepting praise making me fraught to deal with the inevitable criticism? Is that why the objective comment is rarely tabled? I'm not going to say I know the answers. I will say it helps we make sense of the performance of masonry. If the master passes inferior work, who is at fault when the cathedral is poorly built? A little wean shorter to help us through that. Footprints. It's played with Herbie Hancock, Reginald Workman, and Joe Jenkins. Praise or encouragement? Thank you. Just gets better and better and better sometimes. And yeah, we deserve that. Wayne Shorter, Footprints. Just bliss. Share with you a bit of poetry today, as we tend to do. The expression, a way of describing the soul of the world. It's the way I've heard poetry explained, and I like that. I like that. Oh, the misanthropes don't like that kind of thing. It's like poetry is, it's like, it speaks to us on a private, a primary level, I think. And the joy, can you imagine? You know what it's like when we're attending music and we're all, you know, a big crowd and we're all enjoying it. We're not looking for the person that's sort of sitting there saying, oh my goodness, I think it's too loud. Or I can't hear, or sit down, I can't see, you know, that we're not looking at the whiners and complainers. We're there with the people that are just rocking it, that are just enjoying. You've been in a crowd of Masons where there's some wild, beautiful music going on, and you look around and there, you have to look at this imperceptible toe tapping. Because, my goodness, you can't smile, you can't nod ahead, you can't tap along, you can't stand up. And, you know, you would never do that. Where I am, the expression of that kind of emotional reaction is just verboten. And other places, it's spontaneous. It's just joy. It's that rapture. This is a piece of work by Max Ehrman. He was an American writer and poet. And attorney for Terre Haute, Indiana. In 1927, he wrote this piece of prose poem, Desiderata. My goodness, get it together there, Graham. Desiderata. It's sort of a style of his to write spiritual themes. So I'm not going to chatter away. Check this out. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 stanzas. So I'm going through them with you and tell me what you think at the end. Go placidly amid the noise and haste and remember what peace there may be in silence. As far as possible without surrender, be on good terms with all persons. Speak your truth quietly and clearly and listen to others, even the dull and the ignorant. They too have their story. Avoid loud and aggressive persons. They are vexations to the spirit. If you compare yourself with others, you may become vain and bitter, for always there will be greater and lesser persons than yourself. Enjoy your achievements as well as your plans. Keep interested in your own career, however humble. It is a real possession in the changing fortunes of time. Exercise caution in your business affairs, for the world is full of trickery. But let this not blind you to what virtue there is. Many persons strive for high ideals, and everywhere life is full of heroism. Be yourself. Especially, do not feign affection, neither be cynical about love. For in the face of all aridity and disenchantment, it is as perennial as the grass. Take kindly the counsel of the years, gracefully surrendering the things of youth. Nurture strength of spirit to shield you in sudden misfortune. But do not distress yourself with dark imaginings. Many fears are born of fatigue and loneliness. Beyond a wholesome discipline, be gentle with yourself. You are a child of the universe. No less than the trees and the stars, you have a right to be here. And whether or not it is clear to you, No doubt the universe is unfolding as it should. Therefore, be at peace with God. Whatever you conceive him or her to be, and whatever your labors and aspirations in the noisy confusion of life, keep peace with your soul. With all its sham and drudgery and broken dreams, it is still a beautiful world. Cheerful. Strive to be happy. Natural talent. And when she stops and picks up the trumpet or the sax, talented person. So we'll hear more of the Modus, Chamorro, and Trevor trio. No doubt, Andrea Modus. Oh, you little symbolists, you know what you're like. top up whatever you're having there, you know, or warm it up, or throw another ice cube in it if you're making some concoction with a good whiskey. Or find some, maybe you're a fan of Diplomático, that Venezuelan sipping rum. Ooh. Life is hard. No matter where we are and what we're doing, it's transitory. It's an illusion in a large way. And we can also shape our realities. You know? We make of life what we can. And we adapt. How adaptive are we? Well, masonry really challenges, really puts it out there to help us to become more reflective and to be able to put the expected and unexpected events, the capriciousness of life, into context. That makes sense. And we call that gaining control of our emotions. Yeah, we still, you know, when we're connecting with each other, there is that emotional statement there. It's the same statement that's made in a much different way intellectually and emotionally when we're in a place where we're sharing a musical experience with a whole crowd of people, whether it's a jazz concert or classical music or opera or a rock concert. The music fuses us. That beat, the beat that appeals to us is the reflection of the sound that we've heard since before we were born. We were listening to our heartbeat. It wasn't like we were having great conversations then. But what do you hear? Well, you hear that bum, 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 bum. And it's comforting. It's comforting. It's warm. Everything's fluid around us. Life is, at the start, very, very good. Now, we step into more discussions about the reality of masonry, where we push. We're looking. You and I, we're that audacious bunch. We want to understand more about the meaning of life than our own experience. So we look at it through the experience of composers and artists. What does the poet tell us? What did Ehrman just tell us about ourselves as human beings and about the world around us? What does Shakespeare do? What does Kipling do? What does Baudelaire the other day? You know, we were talking about Charles Baudelaire. You know, they're capturing something that is unique and unusual because it stretches us. So what do the artists, the great artists of what we determine as greatness is things with endurance. So there's some toe-tapping music, and you might not like the music, but you're drawn to it. You find yourself, maybe you're find that with rap. It's like, I don't like this music. It's just terrible. It's not even music. But all of a sudden, it's like, ta-da. Yeah, you know, I'm there. Something's happening, and I don't like it. I don't like it. Or maybe you do that when you're like most of us. We've been taught that, you know, there's certain types of music that are elitist. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. It's for us to experience, and not everybody does. There's music that endures. And we are, masonry, are part of a world that thinks about the essentials being endurables. Those are things that appeal to the world at large. You don't have to. Our listeners from Cameroon have a particular style of music and different, unique style of rhythm. It stands alone as it should. It stands alone in a world of other rhythms and musical footprints and expressions. As does masonry, as do you. The permanence that we pass on in masonry is reflected in our study of the arts and sciences. We can have those, we blend in those unique private secrets of the heart, the experience that you had when you were being, you were accepting obligations. You know, that elation, or was it elation, or was it curiosity, or was it that overwhelmed feeling? And then we have that newborn experience, like we've been dropped. Oh my goodness, you know, why don't we have this warm, fuzzy feeling, or safe and protected around me for the rest of my life? All of a sudden, we experience this chill, where we're standing on our own two feet, and there's nobody guiding us now. And we do hear some people say, oh my goodness, you know, it's, what happened to that feeling? Well, we were born. That doesn't go on. We evolved. And now we have a lot of, you know, some of that is just so direct. We're to be quiet. We're to learn to observe. Well, you don't know that unless you've been taught that. Aude, vide, tace. What does the motto learn? Well, poor students, poor scholarship, learns very little. Doesn't mean we don't learn, but we don't learn these things. So we'll talk today just a very little bit from Dyer's material on symbolism in craft masonry. It enriches the experience now for all of us. I'll go on, if it's okay with you, about a Mason's Lodge, and it's always placed symbolically due east and west. Don't you love this? It's like thousands of years of history and culture just colliding in masonry. Many Masons believe that the layout should be physically so, and in their plans and designs will go to untold lengths to achieve this, even at great inconvenience. Christian churches are, wherever possible, set in this way. And with the religious background of masonry, no doubt this has some influence on the physical practice for Masons' lodges. But many cases can be found of churches laid out in a different line where convenience made this necessary. Indeed, this is no new problem, and it's referred to in the 1754 Book of Constitutions of the Moderns' Grand Lodge, which was edited by Reverend John Entick. The reconstructed St. Paul's Cathedral was built due east and west, and so it is at a slight angle to the approach up Ludgate Hill, a matter which has produced planning problems in recent rebuilding schemes. St. Clement Danes Church, which divides the Strand in London so that traffic passes both sides, is also, by being built east and west, not quite along the same line as the street. And of these, the Reverend says, as the appearance of St. Paul's Cathedral is injured by its oblique position with the street by which we approach it, so the public highway through the Strand is most absurdly contracted by superstitiously fixing St. Clement's Church due east and west instead of complying with the direction of the street. In confined situations, no ideal consideration ought to take place of general convenience. But, oh, there's a but. Symbolically, lodges are due east and west, with the entrance in the west. The Reverend J.T. Lawrence has suggested that the inner guard is the assistant to the junior warden in being in charge of the door. But that door should be placed in the south so that the control is more obviously in the junior warden's charge, with his assistant near him. But this suggestion quite overlooks the original symbolism, which is still followed, and also overlooks a change during the development of lodges made for a completely different reason. Some reasons for an east-west layout are contained in the old lectures and are still here today. And in the explanation of the first degree tracing board, this board being an emblematic representation of the lodge, the most important reason is again taken from the Holy Writ, that King Solomon's temple was placed that way, but more than this, that it was placed on that axis because God told Moses to place that way the tent or tabernacle used by the Israelites as a place of worship during their wanderings in the wilderness. It's a tent, yeah. Furthermore, King David, who was not permitted by God to build the temple himself, passed on the necessary instructions to his son, Solomon, to whom the actual construction was divinely entrusted. So, if you're close to a King James version of the Bible, Exodus chapter 27 gives details of the structure of the tabernacle, Exodus 27, which was to have a length of 100 cubits on an east-west line and a breadth of 50 cubits, or double square in plan. William Hutchinson, writing in 1775, quoted Josephus, the Jewish historian, on the subject of the tabernacle and its influence on the symbolic origins of the Masonic Lodge. Thomas Sandby's Grand Temple for the Moderns' Grand Lodge, dedicated in 1776, was in the approximate form of a double cube. It was about 78 feet long and about 38 to 39 feet in both width and height. King Solomon's temple was placed east-west with the sole entrance through the porch in the east. Most papers and articles on the design and layout of the temple agree on these points. Ezekiel chapter 8, verse 16 is most often quoted as justification. And he brought me into the inner court of the Lord's house, and behold, at the door of the temple of the Lord, between the porch and the altar, there were 25 men with their backs toward the temple of the Lord and their faces toward the east. Although masonry has kept the east-west axis in its lodges consistent with that of King Solomon's temple, it has changed the orientation so that the entrance to lodges is in the symbolic east-west. This has caused a good deal of havoc with some of the symbolic orientation, particularly in the case of the winding staircase leading to the middle chamber, which in King Solomon's temple went off to the south from just inside the porch, ultimately led toward the west. In a mason's lodge, it must lead towards the pedestal in the east, and so has to start from the north towards the south to be in the same relative position. The other reasons for the old lectures tell us why this is, and they have a profound effect on the symbolism of the lodge. The first such reasons is religion, that it was the custom of Christian churches to be placed east and west. And others are that knowledge originated in the east and spread its divine influence to the west, and that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. The change of orientation may well have been because churches of the established religion were placed with the sanctuary and the altar in the east and the main entrance usually in the west. There is again a possibility that it was influenced, as some other points have been shown to be, by the Kabbalah. In the Jewish Encyclopedia, there is a reference to an essential doctrine of one particular school. His Majesty, also called the Ineffable Word, which has size and shape and sits on a throne in the east as the actual representative of God. His throne is separated by a curtain on the east, south, and north from the world of angels, the side on the west being uncovered. We go on, don't we? We do go on. It's been a pleasure being with you today. The things around us, some explanations are esoteric, some are frank and forward. You can see here that the influence of the predominant religion in the area where masonry, as we know it, was formed in Britain, was the Christian church. This is after centuries of bitter of acrimony and war. My own family background, our family history suggests that we flipped from one faith, from Catholic to Protestant, depending on the inclination of the emperor of the day, because it could be risky to life and limb. So today, if the emperor was a Catholic, I'm a Catholic, and I'm a good Catholic. And tomorrow, if the emperor is a Protestant, I'm a good Protestant, a happy Protestant. We do what we need to do to survive. Masonry is enriched. But for you, this discovery remains. What is it that an understanding of the symbolism of the lodge could bring to you? What difference could it bring? Well, we will never know unless you're the person asking the question of yourself, whether you have that curiosity. And then you explore it. We all in that way become alchemists. We become scientists. And we'll talk again about the influence of the Baroque period, where alchemy became, during that period in the 18th century, really became more science than philosophy. The alchemy became chemistry, 17th, 18th century. A lot of it, and And now we're asking questions about the East. Where, what happened? What happened? And if it happened there, could it happen here? Well, yeah. The leaders, the intellectual and spiritual leadership, the growth that was happening in these predominant cultures under sultans and under the pharaohs, where did it go? And how? And can it be restored? Well, those are questions that we want to reflect on in terms of our own cultures and natures. In the meantime, live a good life. Explore your own nature. How has Masonry changed you? Here's a little Coleman Hawkins. Yeah, it's body and soul. Yeah, I know. I can't help it. Trying to pull things together. Body, soul, and I would add mind, Coleman. I look forward to being with you again next week when we explore topics relevant and pertinent to the growth of the spiritual nature of Masonry and the Masons. A shout out to our listeners from Russia and Uganda and China and America. How are you doing, America? Don't let the sophistry get you down. And the Philippines and France did I say Austria? And Brazil, Russia, what you bring and your the uniqueness of your cultures is amazing as we try to understand how it's moving forward, how it's reinventing itself, and how it's reflecting and standing on the shoulders of great Russians from the history past. Whether the maritime supremacy of the Brits will ever be restored, maybe it would be like the maritime dominance of Venice being restored, or France, or Spain, or Portugal. So listeners around the world that have been tuning in across Canada, thank you so very much for being with us. I hope you've enjoyed and can take away something. Remember, there's a difference between praise, you're doing a wonderful job, and encouragement. The work and your dedication is showing, your rehearsal and practice is really showing through. When we praise somebody, we're saying it's an end game. We would never do that to a child or to somebody with talent. If we started to do that, they would never, ever progress. Such is the difference between a true mentor and the rest of us. Coleman Hawkins, Body and Soul. Cheers. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.